Brian Sotheby joins us. Suds, how are you?
Good, boys. How are you?
Good. Hey, Bob Nicholson, of course, when you played at the World Juniors, he was overseeing it. How much, what was his role overseeing the World Junior team when you were there?
You know, I didn't see Bob too much, actually.
Okay.
There was a couple times when we were in Toronto. We had events after the team was named. I remember one dinner he was there, and the Gretz was there as well, signing autographs for the guys. But for the most part, we didn't see him too much.
You know, it's interesting, Brian. Hockey management has changed so much just in the last 10
mm-hmm.
years. Detroit was maybe one of the first to add multi-layers of managers. Jimmy Neal as an assistant for a long time. Could have been a GM anywhere. With the Oilers now, Kevin Lowe, president of hockey operations, Craig McTavish, GM, Scott House, an assistant GM, Patrick LaForge handles the president duties on the business side. A guy like Nicholson, you add him to the mix, it seems to me he could take care of business, and he's also got relationships on the hockey side. It looks like a fit to me. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's obviously been around the game for a long time, been around Team Canada and had great success there. He's leaving there on a high note, and why not? I mean, the more people you can bring in, great hockey people, bounce things off of, help you make decisions. I know a lot of people would like to see others leave, but if that's not going to happen, then keep bringing in guys that can have some influence and maybe push this thing in the right direction.
Yeah, like, I look at Bob Nicholson, I see him more in like, the business side necessarily than the hockey side
yeah.
of things, right? Like, I see him kind of as a CEO and, you know, whatever title you want to give him, but I don't see him coming in and suddenly, you know, Craig McTavish has to pass by every trade or draft thing through Bob Nicholson. I see him more on a business side of things with some, you know, discussions with the hockey ops, but I would see it more as a business side.
For sure, but I think when you have organizations – they run down through everybody. So I'm not saying that Mac T necessarily will have to answer to him, but I guarantee you there'll be some input there, just like there is to Kevin Lowe, and on down the ladder when decisions are being made. Mac T probably will still have the ultimate decision hand, but when you have minds like that, you're bouncing opinions off of everyone.
Brian, I'll pick your brain on one thing, and your guess is probably as good as mine, no better, no worse, but we're waiting on Steve Smith. You've been around
mm-hmm.
the hockey architecture of teams a long time as a player. You see how coaches interact and so on and so forth. Do you see it as a demotion if they say, Steve, you can stay, but you'll be the fourth guy and you go upstairs? Steve Smith's been around. Ties to Chicago, ties to Calgary. What's your bet? What do you think is going to come of the decision we're waiting on from Smith?
Yeah, it's hard to say what will come of it. I definitely see it as a demotion. I mean, obviously, they feel like they needed a new voice in the room and or on the bench. Whether he does stay with the team, I guess he would still be in the room at times if he's the eye in the sky or whatever it may be, but I definitely see it as a demotion. I mean, obviously, they want another voice in that room and another voice on the bench. I have to think right now that he's weighing his options, or when you hear that he's doing that, I assume he's trying to get another job and potentially taking offers from other teams, because I'm sure he sees it as a demotion. He feels like he's not necessarily wanted. He obviously still wants to be in the game. And I would imagine weighing his options means I'm trying to find a home elsewhere, and if nothing will come of it, then maybe I'll consider taking that job.
So let's say he's out there looking at other ones. Do you then want to have mm-hmm. him say, okay, guys, you know what, I couldn't find any other, I'll come back here? Like, that's not a great scenario either, is it?
Yeah, well, I agree. But obviously, for them to even give him that option, either they're just trying to let him down nicely, or they do feel like he still has value that he can bring. And you know, in the hockey world, you've seen it a lot of times where teams will respectfully give someone, a part of their staff, the opportunity to move on and see if they can get a better job elsewhere. And I imagine that's what's happening here, is that they still value him, clearly, because they haven't just completely got rid of him, but are leaving it open to him to make the decision if he ultimately wants to stay.
Brian, we've talked on this show, and you and Jason have talked. We talk about the mix, whether it's the players. I want to stay with the coaching staff. You've got that player's perspective, as does Strudwick. So let me ask you. I used to be close to the room, but I'm still an outsider.
Yep.
As players, what do you want from an assistant? You know, sometimes there's a role, good cop, bad cop. It strikes me that today's players are more sophisticated. They can see past when they're being massaged one way or another with the carrot or the stick.
Mm-hmm.
With this mix, you bring in a guy like Ramsey. You still got Acton. You got Dallas Eakins in his second year. What if they do replace Smith, what kind of guy do they need to add to that mix, in your opinion?
It's hard to say, just because I don't know Ramsey very well, and obviously never worked under Steve Smith either, but I've been one guy that kind of pumped the horn or pumped the brakes, if you will, with a lot of people losing their minds about the assistant coaches. And I get it. I understand for the principle of it, having the same assistant coaches year after year when there's been head coaching changes doesn't look very good. But I'm also of the belief that at the end of the day, it's everything comes down to the head coach, and it's ultimately his final decision, and he's going to put things in place. And basically, the assistant coaches are going to send his message to the players. They're not going to be whispering in the players' ear, don't listen to what Dallas wants. I mean, it's ultimately the head coach. So anytime that I've dealt with an assistant coach, they've been there to help you, like you said, be a liaison to the head coach, work on things, help you after practice, talk about face-offs, talk about stats, talk about the little things, little parts of the game that you can prove that the head coach doesn't necessarily want to deal with every day with every single player. And you generally have a better relationship with your assistant coaches because you can get some messages through to the coach. They can sort of relay things they're hearing in the coach's room of what they'd like to see better or what they're happy with. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, for me, assistant coaches are assistant coaches, and I've never played for one that really controlled a room or I felt like was overseeing the head coaching duties. I mean, for the most part, it's a friendly relationship, and that's about it.
Seems like Brian Sotheby joins us from MotorsNation.com. More of a teacher role, really, for a guy like this.
Yeah.
He comes in, and, you know, when you look at their defense, gave up the most goals in the league again last year. We know they had brutal goaltending for the first month. I understand that. But, you know, this team needs to know how to play better away from the puck. But Ramsey himself even said, he goes, the players themselves have to be willing to do it, Brian. You're going to have the greatest coaches in the world. If you don't have the horses, it doesn't matter. It's not like I don't expect them to be a miracle worker. It's a good hire. I think it's a good addition. But there's so much more things that need to happen for this team to improve than adding an assistant coach who's got a good track record as being a teacher.
Well, exactly. I mean, obviously, he's got great experience. He's a veteran guy that's been around. And you hope that the players will listen to him. You hope that they will hear his message of two-way play and playing a more defensive style. And I mean, it's just the case of this team being a little bit young right now, having a lot of guys that are more offensive than, say, two-way type personalities. And it will just come with experience or adding a few different pieces. But if you're Taylor Hall, if you're Jordan Eberle, if you're Sam Gagne, and you're watching these playoffs right now, it's defensive hockey, whether you like it or not. I mean, the Kings are opening it up when they have to, but the Rangers are where they are because they play a sound two-way game. The Kings are where they are ultimately because they're one of the best defensive teams in the league. The Edmonton Oil Kings won the Memorial Cup because they played a strong defensive hockey game. And whether you like it or not, I know, Greg, you love offense and you hate the defense, but defense still wins. And I know you hate it because it's easier or, you know, you don't have to do as much, but it's just effort, and that's all it is. And so it's just getting through to the players and having a light bulb has to go on for them that if we want to win, we have to play a full 200-foot game. We have to make the right decisions at the red line. We have to know when to push, and we have to know when to make that safe play and back check, back check, back check.
And I look at the Kings, though. When I look at, you know, the opportunities they give up, I really like they play decent defense, but I think they've opened it up a lot more than we've seen in previous years, which to me is great. And it shows that you can win. If you have a good goaltender, you can win and not be worried of having to win every game 1-0. Like, this year's playoffs has given me hope that the NHL will allow teams to play, you know, if you have a two-goal lead, it isn't just let's trap it up and bore everybody to sleep.
I agree. But, I mean, they're still one of the best defensive teams in the regular season, and yeah. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened in that San Jose series. Obviously, they got down 3-0, and I don't think anybody expected that. But since then, it's just been a goal parade, and they've played a lot more open style when they've had to, and they've shown that they can score with the best of teams, which is something they didn't do very much in the regular season. But ultimately, you see them in game three, they're able to just completely shut it down. They play completely different with a lead, and that's something they haven't had a lot in this series and even the series before. So they've constantly been playing catch up, and that's causing them to have to open up, and they've had the guns to come back and score. But you see them when they have a lead. I mean, they had 15 shots, I think, in game three, and they just completely shut it down, and Quick had to play very well at times. But they went into sort of a shell and really sort of limited the chances. And that's what they want to do. They want to play with a lead and just shut you right down.
Yeah, hadn't had done it. They've scored 3 or more goals 19 out of their 25 games and given up 3 or more 12 out of 25. So it's been way more entertaining.
Unreal.
For sure. But they can play defense when they need to. Suds, good luck in your fishing derby this weekend.
Thanks, buddy. I'm going for back-to-back.
Well, don't fall out of the boat.
I will do my best.
All right. We'll talk to you Monday.
All right, boys.